please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
I mean, they always have a big mouth, they always talk a lot, so it happened before, it's gonna happen again.
Welcome back, tennis family. I'm your host, John Garica. I'm so excited for today because in honor of the WTA celebrating their 50th year in existence in 2023, we start our own fantastic 50 series that will take a closer look at some of our very favorite WTA moments from over the past half century. Along the way, we'll catch up with players that each made significant contributions on tour by making the top 50, and we'll deep dive some interesting topics with players that remember exactly how it feels to win some of those big matches. It's basically going to be a WTA reunion. Today's episode was born out of the sheer joy of catching up and chatting with former WTA doubles number one and Wimbledon champion Barbara Strýcová as she made her big comeback to the tour in Madrid after being out for more than a couple years after having her baby Vincent. And that chat got me thinking, as we've had so many memorable WTA comebacks over the past 50 years, I thought we'd take a closer look today at the art of the WTA comeback and reminisce all the amazing moments when our favorite players made their way back onto the court. I could never do something this awesome alone, so I'm joined today by two fantastic individuals that know exactly what they're talking about when it comes to their tennis. My first guest today mixes everything and anything pop culture, from The Real Housewives to pop music to Survivor, and of course, his love of WTA tennis. As the senior correspondent and writer for my very favorite online website for news, fashion, politics, and of course, your favorite pop culture articles at Vox.com. Please welcome Alex Abad Santos. Alex, welcome. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about women's tennis. It's all I want to talk about all the time.
It's happening today. It's happening, Alex. It's happening. Everyone listening, go follow Alex on Twitter right now. It's at Alex_Abads, A-B-A-D-S. It's literally everything pop culture.
Oh my God, it's so silly. It's
no,
it's silly.
It's spelled right out in the pages for you. It's like on anyone's brain. It's like you're saying the things that we're all thinking. It's really great. Plus, when you told me that you used to record matches as a kid to emulate the Eva Maioli forehand, I knew that we could be best friends for the rest of our lives.
Okay, so first off, it started with like I was maybe five, and it was like the first time I saw Steffi Graf, right? And I was like, who is this beautiful woman with this gigantic forehand? I'd be like, okay, well, I want to play tennis too. And then I would copy that forehand, and it was so bad because it was so late, and the only person that could do that forehand was Steffi Graf because she hit it so late.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And then it, like, multiple women took my heart, and it's like, I just want forehands like that. We all play like Martina Hingis.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to channel my Martina Hingis today a little bit. You can't see what I'm wearing today, but I tried to. I said, what is the most
Martina? Is it the one sleeve?
The one sleeve, yeah. It was as Hingis as I can get in my closet today. Can I ask you a little bit about writing? Because, you know, you make a living writing, and there's so many interesting things that you write about, and I love reading your articles. I really, really do. What are some of your favorite topics to talk about or to write about? I know pop culture is such a broad topic.
I mean, I love celebrity gossip. I love I love like taking something silly. I don't know. Like I think a lot of the silly stuff that we're obsessed with kind of explains bigger pictures. And I think that's what I love.
100%. I absolutely feel you. I want to get to know you a little more. So I'm thinking, before we bring out our player guest, who actually has played a lot of the players that we're going to talk about today, can we do a quick pop culture lightning round?
Yes, but I'm so nervous this week. I was the kid in school that was always afraid of pop quizzes, like, even though I studied.
This is just your brain. It's your own brain. Don't be scared. Don't be nervous of your own brain. Let's play Seven with Santos. It's really simple. I'm just going to ask you seven quick questions. You just have to give me the very first thing that pops into your pop culture brain, Alex, okay?
Okay.
Don't be worried.
Here we go.
Number one, you're producing a new reality TV show, The Real Housewives of Tennis. Which three players in WTA history do you get to anchor this show?
Who are holding the tennis balls? Maria Sharapova, Serena Williams, and Mary Pierce.
Oh, yeah. That would be okay. That's like a good range of people.
Like, you need a middle ground. Hopefully my answer was okay. I feel like Mary Pierce could be the bridge between Sharapova and Serena Williams.
It's true. There's no wrong answers here. I went Yankovic, Kournikova, and I needed somebody like a little more grounded. I needed like a Jess Pegula or like a Taylor Townsend just to kind of ground the cast.
Yeah. Well, it's also like you can't have like a cast with like all Maria Sharapova's, right?
Exactly. All right. Speaking of reality TV, which past or present reality TV show would you personally thrive on?
I want to say Survivor, but I know I'm not good at that. But I think that is the one I would try to be good on. Like, I always envision myself being like, oh, I could make it. I could lie. I could backstab. I could make alliances. But then it's just like, 3 days out there without any food, I'd be like, I just want to go home.
It's true. Survivor's like my favorite show. I'm into it. All right. Your bucket list concert.
I mean, I've already seen it. It's Madonna, the Confessions Tour. I saw it when I was younger, though, and I couldn't really appreciate everything that was happening. But that album is so good. So if Madonna does any Confessions songs on this Greatest Hits album,
she's coming back. Yeah, she'll definitely do it. I'm going Eurovision. That's my bucket list concert. I really want to go to Eurovision.
Wait, why? Like, Eurovision from the past? Or like,
we could talk about this for 3 hours today. I'm just telling you right now. Why? What? I mean,
if given the opportunity, would you just... I'd want to see, like, the Eurovision that Celine won, right?
I would love to be in, like, Liverpool when it's happening. I mean, soon. We're on the cusp of Eurovision this season. It's my favorite.
I know, but, like, wouldn't it be amazing to be, like, at one of those Eurovisions when, like, The Ringer was there?
Yes. Yeah, when Celine was there? Yes, absolutely. All right, speaking of Celine, okay, maybe this is you. Number four, which celebrity would you say is closest to your personality?
My God, which celebrity? I'd probably say Anne Hathaway.
Okay, great. We'll investigate why over a cocktail later. Number five, name any pop culture moment that lives in your brain rent-free. Like, you come back to it. It doesn't matter what it is. Any pop culture moment.
Beyonce Super Bowl.
Okay, that's fair. Number six, since today's theme is comebacks, what's been your favorite pop culture comeback from the past few years?
I mean, I think it's disco, like in general. Like, I feel like the disco vibe has come back, but also like year after year,
I'm into it.
Kylie Minogue has come back, and bless that woman.
Or Jennifer Coolidge. I mean, that's kind of like Kylie Minogue on the screen, right? She's had the year, White Lotus.
She has had the best couple of years.
I'm throwing this out there. What do we think of charcuterie boards? Hello, pop culture moment. Who doesn't love a charcuterie board? I'm sorry. Just FYI. We can just drop the mic now.
I'm a little lactose intolerant, so charcuterie boards are a weakness for me.
Oh, I picked the wrong person to appreciate a charcuterie board. All right, fine.
I love them, but I know that they're just going to hurt me soon.
All right, last one in this round. Let's talk tennis. Your favorite WTA moment from the past 50 years. Let's go back to tennis.
Oh my God. My favorite WTA moment from the past 50 years. This is so hard.
Getting to know you. This is it.
I would say Steffi Graf's last, when she won the French Open, defeated Martina Hingis for her last Grand Slam.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think you understand how much I love that this woman probably doesn't even care about tennis as much as like, but she's just so good at it.
So good.
Don't you love that?
I love
it. It's just like someone that's just brutally good at tennis. And it's probably like, oh, I'm just good.
No, exactly. Well, she's like, well, she married tennis. I mean, pretty much too. So I mean, it's still right in her life, which I think is.
She absolutely hates tennis though.
She hates tennis. Steffi Graf is a great segue today. I wonder what our player guest's favorite WTA moment. Let's find out because I'm dying to bring her out. Having played throughout the magnificent 90s and peaking at world number 27 in singles back in 1995, she planned 19 Grand Slams as well as the Fed Cup under the German flag. Before ultimately retiring in October of 2000, she'd not only share the court playing legends of the game like Hingis and Seles, but she'd score some amazing wins over former top 10 players like Aryna Spurlea, Zina Garrison, Helena Suková, and Chanda Rubin, as well as doubles greats like Kournikova and Zvereva. As a 2008 Vanderbilt grad, she's now a successful tennis and mental skills instructor living in Denver, Colorado, USA. And she even helped my game a few times when we both lived in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you very much for that, by the way. Her more than 700 videos on her YouTube channel, Micah Babbel Tennis, is everything you need to help sharpen your tennis game and get you to that next level that you're searching for. Please welcome my friend, Micah Babbel. Micah, thanks for sitting through that for a little while. I don't know if you even like Eurovision or Survivor, Kylie Minogue.
I would have had no answer to any of those questions. Like, I have no idea. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. We're here to talk about tennis, though. You know, I can't talk about beating Chanda Rubin at, you know, the Australian Open. So, you know, that's what's going to happen for you today. Real quick, though, Alex, do you play tennis? We talked a little bit.
I played tennis since I was like 7, and then I stopped.
Okay.
After high school, it was just like, well, I'm obviously not good enough college scholarship.
Because you couldn't copy Steffi Graf's forehand.
Not with that forehand.
No, exactly. No. Perfect timing for today because you have to check out Micah's YouTube channel. She's on TikTok as well.
Yeah, I'm TikToking it. I'm doing all of it.
Micah, your videos are such high quality. We're talking Micah Babbel Tennis for anybody. Please go out and listen and watch. So many interesting strategy lessons, drills, mental topics. I mean, there's been so many that you've covered. There's one on signaling in doubles. And I love playing doubles, but I hate to signal. And I literally come back to it. I've saved it. And I realized I hate to signal because I didn't know what the hell to do. And you explained it in layman's terms. And I was like, okay, yeah. And I have to remind myself and go out and watch it a couple times whenever I play because I'm like—
Did you share that with your partner? That's maybe the first step, kind of being on the same page.
So I probably have to watch it again. I need to watch the video again now.
You probably need to get your partner to watch it too.
It was helpful. And of course it was helpful because, you know, I'm talking to somebody who's won a WT title in doubles. I mean, you've made the third round of a couple Grand Slams. You've defeated legendary players, Hall of Famers. So I'm so glad you're here today to talk about your career.
This is awesome. I'm super happy that we finally got it done.
I know. I'm so excited. Can we talk about your career for a moment? Because we're celebrating 50 years of WTA tennis. And looking back on your career, I mean, come on, you're an accomplished WTA player. I mean, you got to 27 in the world. Is there a moment or two that you consider to be your proudest moments?
Yeah, I think we kind of talked in the sort of warm up for this, like the third round or second round to get into the third round against Chanda Rubin, 9-7 or whatever it was in the third. And I had another kind of long one against Helena Suková, 11-9 or something.
12-10. You keep going. 12-10.
There we go. You know better. Since then, they've introduced whatever. I don't even know. Do they play an open tiebreak at the... But yeah, those were the ones that kind of stood out because at both times, like I had friends there also, especially in Paris, and it was cool to kind of have somebody there who knows me from, like, you know, this high on or this young on. But it feels so long ago now now nobody is on tour anymore who I played.
That's not true. No, I mean, barely. I mean, come on, Venus.
Yeah, that's true.
Come on, we still got, she's just celebrated her 30th year.
This is true, yes.
Come on.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You got all the way to 27 in the world. It was such an accomplishment. I mean, when we're talking about today, go look at the rankings today, guys, and see who's 27 in the world. We're talking, you know, elite players that are playing today. When you started seeing your name, Micah, in, let's say, 30 in the world, you know, we're talking 1995 and we're like, okay, we're climbing. We're doing the things that you were trying to do as a young kid. When you started getting there and now you're like, okay, I'm at 27. Are you thinking, okay, I want to get to 20? Or is it like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm like top 30?
I think both, to be perfectly honest. I mean, to get there, especially after so many people in the beginning always said like, no, you're already too old, you know, because I turned pro when I was 17. And at the time, Jen Capriati just won a Grand Slam and Steffi had won. Of course, you always, when you're from Germany, you're getting compared to Steffi and Anke Huber, who also had made the top 50 already when she was 17. And I'm turning pro here when I'm 17. So there were a lot of people that said like, oh, no, you're not ever going to make it. To get to 30 was also a big fat you kind of in their face a little bit. So that was cool. But you're finally finding your rhythm. You're finally sort of feeling that you're belonging there. And you're not like, ooh, this is Steffi.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot different now. I mean, but in your era, we're talking the top two players are Steffi Graf and Anke Huber. I mean, you have to put yourself in that perspective for a minute, like of what you're trying to reach.
And then Sabina Haack was there too. Do you remember her?
Sabina Haack, Marlene Weingartner. I mean, we're talking about all these, Jana Kandar. I mean, I can keep going. I mean, hello.
You know better than me.
Name a German journeywoman. I'm fun at this game. I'm so fun.
Well, no, it's also like that was a generation inspired by like the excellence of Steffi Graf.
Exactly.
It's just basically akin to like going up against Russians after Kournikova, right? When there's a boom, it's like sharks in the water. There was no off day there.
Yeah.
I imagine like it was competitive within the Federation just as much as it was outside of the Federation.
Oh yeah. I mean, it kind of almost was guaranteed if you make it into the top three in your junior class or year, whatever you want to call that, you're going to be top 100 because that was the level. Yeah. I mean, it was super competitive.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you. I really am. I mean, when we met in Atlanta years ago, you were very helpful to me, to my game. And I'm really proud of what you were able to do. And you weren't just great in singles in your career too. You won a WTA doubles title. You almost won a WTA singles title, 7-6 in the third. Come on, Sabine Appelmans. Come on, give her the title.
And a volley right there that I don't know what I did with it. I don't have nightmares about it, but I still do distinctly remember it.
Sabine's tough. Come on.
The Sabines were tough. There were like a few Sabines in there that were tough outs.
You also were iconic on the doubles court too, because you have a win over Kournikova and Zvereva. Come on. I mean, we're talking two legends of the game.
That's the claim to fame.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, is that obviously that's your best WTA doubles win. I mean, that's like amazing. I mean, yeah. Where's your trophy today? Where's your WTA trophy?
It's somewhere in storage, I think.
Okay, fine. I would have been holding mine during this interview today if I had a WTA title. I would have literally just been holding it.
Here, I'll hold this.
All right, Micah, we're talking about comebacks today, and you finally retired in 2000. Not finally. You've only played a decade. I mean, comparative to today,
yeah.
I mean, Venus, we just talked about, she's on her 30th year of WTA tennis this year. Was there ever a moment later on after you retired in 2000 where you said, you know what? I should maybe give this another go. I should do this.
Talk about comeback. I mean, I think during, what was it, 97 or 96, I didn't play at all in 96, or just tried a couple of times. So I was in between those 10 years. I was actually out for 22 months in long stretches, not just like a month here, like a month there. That actually, the funny, well, not so funny, at the last turn, or one of the later tournaments, last tournaments that I played in Essen, a young kid called Kim Clijsters, I don't know why I'm doing air quotations, but a young kid, Kim Clijsters, is coming up, and one of her buddies, a German junior, says, like, hey, let's go watch her practice, you know, because we had tried to kind of started mentoring a little bit the old people like me, you know, mentoring the juniors. And then there's Kim Clijsters, and she is hitting the ever-loving out of the ball effortlessly. I mean, that whole generation coming up, and I'm like, if this is what I then have to, now I'm done. Yeah, Annalena Grünefeld, you remember her?
Of course.
Yes, I forget. She was at a training camp, and same thing. I mean, at the time she was 16, 6'2" high already, and just blasting serves. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm toast. I'm done.
Hey, I've played against your slice backhand. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, I get why you were successful. So
But the thing is, if somebody serves with like, it felt like Mach 500, I mean, by the time I take my racket back, I'm saying, yeah, okay, good for you. You guys go.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And coming from Micah herself, I mean, we know how hard it is. All right, team, it's time to come back chat. And I must say, I've been a huge WTA fan since I was a little kid, and I always had such a big affinity for the great comeback. And today I'm joined by two people that have either been there physically on court, like Micah just said, or at least spiritually through the television, like Alex.
Rooting for all my faves.
That's right. We're for our these amazing moments in WTA history. So here's how today will work. I've enlisted the help of Tennis Fans Online as I asked you all, over the past 50 years of WTA tennis, what has been your favorite comeback? We've had so many iconic comeback moments over the years, from the heroic returns of Monica Seles and Petra Kvitova to the surprising returns of Lindsay Davenport and Martina Hingis. It's time to talk about them, so let's do it. I've compiled the first 100 responses I received from tennis fans all over the world. Thank you to anyone that engaged on our Instagram at Fantastic Tennis Pod. So today kind of feels like WTA Family Feud a little bit because, you know, top 100 answers are on the board. I will say the list today does not reflect the opinion of our panel today, but I do have a feeling that we'll have some very quick opinions coming right up. I just kind of feel that with these two. Today's format will reveal the top 10 fan favorite comebacks in WTA history. And what do I mean when I say favorite comebacks? I'm talking about a player taking an extended break or retirement from the tour, and then bam, they're back. It's like they never left. Before we jump into the top 10, I wanted to go through some of the legends on the list that didn't make the top 10, and I'm definitely interested in hearing what my guests think. Also, I will say, I've gathered, 100 responses. We had 29 different players. So we're running the gamut today from the 70s all the way to today. I mean, there's so many players that had great comebacks, so I'm really excited. We'll start today with someone that honestly to the both of you. I mean, gosh, it pains me to talk about this today because she'd made herself a hot topic in the press lately. She really did. And after some extremely controversial statements regarding trans rights in sports, she's also my favorite Real Housewives of Miami. I mean, we're talking about number 11, Martina Navratilova. Here's the rundown on Martina, guys, before I get your thoughts. 18-time Grand Slam singles champion with a combined 59 majors, the most in the open era we're talking about. Legend. She'd retire in 1994 and then return in the year 2000. In the year 2000, that's 23 years ago. That's crazy. I remember this moment because she came back in Madrid.
Stop it.
Yeah, right?
Don't count.
Oh my gosh. We're talking about Martina coming back in the year 2000 with Miranda Schwart, another legend, who will be joining us soon on an upcoming episode. She'd go on to play sporadically for the next 6 years, winning three mixed doubles Grand Slams in 2003 and 2006. Micah, as someone that has played Martina Navratilova, you shared a court with Martina, this legend, in Filderstadt, 1991. If we can separate everything that's been going on lately, let's talk about maybe just the tennis for one quick moment, if we can. And it's okay, because we all are feeling a certain type of way right now. I understand. What did that comeback mean to you, really, towards Martina's legacy back in 2000? You just retired in 2000.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember thinking that, okay, I'm retiring at 26 and she's coming back at whatever, and literally jumps in and wins Grand Slams right, left and center. And the funny thing actually is she played and they don't have that anymore, like the Legends Tour or whatever it was, for a couple of seasons, like, you know, to get the older players back. I mean, at the Grand Slams, they have it, but they have this independent from the Grand Slams. And I remember that I played in, where was it, 97 in Georgia. And she was the main attraction, if you will, for the seniors tour. And I didn't expect that at all. So we're kind of both in the, I mean, kind of weird, funny little story, but both in the bathroom. And she is one of the very, very few top players that I played who remembered who I was. Because, I mean, they play everybody, right? They play like seven people a week and beat their heinies. And, you know, and so we're standing, washing our hands like good people. And we're looking across like in the mirror and she goes, "Hey, Micah, how's it going?" And I'm taking a step back and I happen to step on her chihuahua.
Whoops.
So that's, yeah, so whoopsie. I did not know what to say. It's like Martina Navratilova remembers me from whenever we played in 1991. That's one of the, I think, really cool memories. And then she goes back out and goes like, "Nah, I'm not a senior. I'll just play and win Grand Slams."
Exactly. No, I loved it. I was such a big fan. You know, I remember that vividly in 2000 where she came back and I was like, "Oh my gosh, play singles. You can win Wimbledon. Let's do it." You know,
yeah.
She did play singles for a little bit. I mean, it was fantastic. Alex, as someone that works in the media.
Wait, I don't get the good. I don't get the fun question.
I know. But let's be diplomatic. Can people separate and still celebrate everything that she's done for tennis?
I mean, I think the thing is that what people expect from Martina is a little bit of empathy. And I think that it's just a little bit like, well, if you face this, why is it so hard to face that? It's an analogous type of thing. And it's just like, okay, well, you face discrimination. You should probably, people feel like you should maybe feel a little certain way when people are faced with discrimination. And I think also it's so many people respect her and she's also quite good at all the other humanitarian stuff. And so people would like to see her kind of reflect that.
Yeah.
It's hard for some of us to understand, like, why is this coming out in this way?
I can't agree more. I mean, I was such a big fan growing up and I'm so glad that Martina made this great recovery, this cancer recovery. Mm-hmm. Cancer's hit my family. I mean, when I heard, thank God she's okay. And of course, Martina Navratilova would survive cancer. I mean, she's a warrior, right? We already know that already.
But it's also like, she's a fighter. It's like if you look at the coverage of that was assigned to Martina Navratilova growing up, right? And it was like who she played and when she played against Chris Everett. She was always painted as like the aggressor or like the woman who was like almost like in a Serena type way, right? It was always like, oh, she's playing like a muscular brand of tennis.
Yeah.
She's opinionated too. And that's why we love her. She's fearless and she always stands up for what she believes. And that's why I've always been such a big fan of her. So I'd love to have her on the show. Let's just say that. I mean, I'd love to hear her opinion. You know, there's so many fans that she's alienated at this point. And I feel like you know, we can all have a diplomatic conversation and discuss a little bit, because I don't want to feel the way I'm feeling at this point. So I get it. Because I want to feel what Micah feels, you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh my gosh, that's my idol. Or my gosh, this is this legend that's, you know, washing her hands like, you know, a human being should. Also, I appreciate that, Micah. I'm glad you washed your hands. But as far as her comeback goes, I mean, hello, she won 3 Grand Slams afterwards. Only warriors do that at her age. And I thought it was great. I love when she played singles too. You know, she won a round at Wimbledon. I think it was like 2004. Poor Catalina Castagno had to be that person that she drew in the first round that it was like, oh, okay, you know, I'm gonna have the hoopla and I'm going to beat you.
Wait, did she win with Kuznetsova?
She played with Kuznetsova. I think she won 3 majors in mixed.
They were a pretty good team. And I love that whole idea of like mentorship, because Kuznetsova was just a baby when it was just like, could you imagine what it was like to get the call from Martina Navratilova that was like, let's play doubles. There's a lot of your game that I love. Could you imagine that?
When you say that, I was doing my research. Can we talk about Billie Jean King for a moment? She didn't make the top 10. She played doubles at the 1990 Virginia Slims of Boca Raton with 13-year-old Jennifer Capriati. When we're talking about let's pair people together, I mean, we're talking about these moments in history that were like...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, right? Come on, that's funny. All right, let's move on a little bit. Martina, icon. Let's talk about it because, you know, there's things we need to talk about. We need to have a conversation. All right, let's talk about somebody else that didn't make the list, and I'm very interested because she was number 12 on the list today. It's Kimiko Date. And Micah, you've played Kimiko, and here's Kimiko's backstory. Retired in 1996 in the top 10. Her last match, she's in the WT Championships playing Hingis, and we never hear from her again until like 2008. And then she's like, hi, remember me? I'm Kimiko Date. Remember my crazy flat strokes? She played all the way till 2017. I mean, we're talking comebacks. This is such a comeback that we've never seen before, really, in these proportions. She beat Li Na and Dinara Safina when she was number 9 in the world at the French Open. She became the oldest player to beat a top 10 player at a Grand Slam. Broke Billie Jean King's record. Speaking of Billie Jean King, amazing. She won a WT title during that time period. Alex, we saw the same story with Martina. Players retired so much earlier and younger than we're seeing today. So a lot of that narrative with Kimiko was accomplished player in her day, but now, you know, we're back a decade later and, you know, she's starting to beat all these top 10 players and everyone was like, oh, maybe it's just the WTA tour isn't as good as it used to, you know, because if we can let players this old win on the tour, no, she broke down barriers. Like she was still great.
I think watching her play is so fun just because it was such a contrast to the way other women were playing at the time, both the times, you know? And it was also like so speedy around the court, but also like I'm 40 now. Like my back hurts. She was playing like if I don't brace my abs when I sneeze, I could throw out my back.
Just sitting too long.
Kimiko Date is out trading punches with like Venus Williams. She was like playing against peak Steffi, right? And then probably came back around like peak Venus, peak Serena.
Oh yeah, all of them.
Could you imagine?
She beat Kirilenko, Hantikova. I mean, she was beating players left and right that, you know, were not her generation. It was amazing. It was, yeah, absolutely.
That whole generational type of tennis of just like, you go out at one point, right? And then when you like re-enter the stream of tennis, everyone's playing at a different level. The game, the meta game has changed. Mm-hmm. The rackets have changed. The training has changed. And it's like, you're not coming back at like the same point that you were leaving. And it's just like, that's fantastic and amazing to me that you could do that again from someone who has to cough and sneeze in the right way. Otherwise, they're completely debilitated for the rest of the day.
I mean, I would love to get in Kimiko's brain to know exactly from leaving from 96 playing Hingis to like, oh my gosh, it's 2008 and we're playing like Safina smacking forehands. Micah, you played Kimiko at 2 Grand Slams. Not one, but 2 Grand Slams. 92 US Open, 95 Wimbledon. Was 95 Wimbledon the Will You Marry Me, Steffi? Or was that 94 Wimbledon? I don't know.
I didn't ask her, but I don't know.
I would have.
I've had a glass of wine, so I don't know if it was either. I think it's 94, but still. Come on, maybe the next year. What was it about Kimiko's game as an opponent? You know, you've played her a couple times. What was it that could stand the test of time through these decades?
Yeah, her game style, it was so unorthodox. And her speed then. I wouldn't underestimate her, but I think for a while people were really underestimating her because she didn't give you a whole lot of power, but just never missed. And what kind of, what is it? The death of a thousand paper cuts or something. It felt like in a rally, like, okay, run this way, run that way. Yeah. And at some point you're just like, oh, screw this. I'm going to go for a dumb shot. At least when I was dumb and young, I guess, in 91. And then it was a little closer next time around. But if you know that you have to win every point 18 times.
That sounds so annoying.
Yeah. I mean, I know that people called her a pusher and that she's absolutely not a pusher. But she also never missed. So what do you do?
It was also like, rarely do you find someone that consistent and never winning a Grand Slam. But like, she was in the semis like at every Grand Slam, quarters or semis.
All the time.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I can't wait till our 90s episode because, I mean, we're going to talk about Kimiko a lot. I mean, and these players that just, gosh, you know, if I don't know about you guys, but we're going to get into the top 10 now. And if I had to make my own list, Kimiko would be in my top 10. I love the idea of someone hanging up their racket and then a decade later saying, you know what? I still got it. I'm still hot shit. I got this. You know what I mean? I love that. What a badass. I would love to talk to Kimiko Date. I just, amazing, amazing.
Wait, are we allowed to say our honorable mention that we didn't get to?
Yeah. Wait, we're going to talk about a couple honorable mentions.
Let me talk about Patty Schnieder.
Well, we're going to talk about Patty Schnieder 100%. Just I'll name them. If something evokes, obviously, when we get to Patty for a second, if you want to jump in here and say something.
Perfect.
But this next one is surprising why it wasn't in the top 10. I think I could really do an entire episode on her story. And she just wrote about it in her book. So, I mean, there's lots to talk about. But the comeback of Ash Barty is just outside the top 10 today. And it's fascinating to me. And it's fascinating to a lot of people. But not too many of you, because you didn't put her in the top 10. And I had to think about it. And I'm like, why wasn't Ash in the top 10? And I thought, okay, well, maybe her story's not done. And maybe that's what you guys decided too. I really think she's going to come back in the next couple years. And I don't think her story's done. I mean, maybe that's why you guys didn't vote for her. Maybe you agree with me, but I'm convinced we're going to see Ash again.
I'm hoping Ash Barty comes back. I mean, quite honestly, she's mainly the reason why I really started watching women's tennis again. To me, like the way that I played, you know, I was just kind of outdated basically with all these big hitters. And all of a sudden there comes somebody, you know, Barty's crafty and just such a class act that I want her to come back.
A player like her just needs a kind of a reset. And that's what she did successfully the first time. You know, I love her story. She goes out and she's, you know, this great successful junior. She's getting all these wild cards and she's this big promise to Australian tennis. And she's like, you know what? I've had enough. I'm done. I'm burned out. And she goes to Australia. She goes to play football. She joins this league. I think she won her league title. She wins everything she does, right? And then she comes back to the tour and she starts at the bottom. She's playing all these low-level tournaments and it didn't last long because it seems like she shot to number one in no time. And yeah, her rise to number one's iconic. So congrats to Ash. She touches gold wherever she goes. So I'm sure she's on the golf course, hitting holes in one somewhere. But I'd love to have her back on tour and miss that slice backhand. And yeah, don't we all wish we could see her battle Iga on the clay? I really would love to see that. So yeah, Ash, good luck. I think we'll see you again. So maybe that's why you're so low on the list. We'll do this again next year and maybe you'll be back in the top 10.
Have five children. Doesn't matter. Come back.
She'll come back.
She'll come back again. She'll win another 10 Grand Slams, right? We'll see. Sloane Stephens, she had that great run to the U.S. Open, winning the U.S. Open. She came back played, I think, like from August 2016 to 2017. She came back. It was really, really great for Sloane. Karina Morariu, that was a big story. I remember as a kid, you know, she came back from leukemia, had to play Serena Williams at the U.S. Open in like her second match back. But okay, that's fine. But still, what a great triumph over tragedy story.
No one I wanted to see win more than Karina Morariu.
Right? Nobody.
Like when she came back.
Of course.
You're just like, yes, go. Everyone else should just like give up. Like Lindsay Davenport, what are you doing? Stop knocking her out of these tournaments.
I know. I did an episode with Karina Morariu. Go back and listen to it. I mean, it was so amazing to hear that moment. The lead up to that was, I think I cried a couple times during that episode. So Tracy Austin was 15. She had two major comebacks. She was in a car accident. She still came back. I mean, so many great things. 16 was Patty Schnieder.
Oof.
I mean, come on. That's a good one.
Any woman or any female tennis player with that kind of forehand, the giant heavy topspin, that backhand. I have like fantasies about that Fed Cup team, that Hingis Schnieder Fed Cup team and playing against them. And it's just like, must have been so wild. Like what was happening in Switzerland at that time?
Exactly.
Am I allowed to say that my favorite Patty Schnieder moment is when she basically got in a fight with Conchita Martinez? I think it was Hilton Head.
Amelia Island. Maybe it could be Hilton Head. I could be wrong.
It was one of those, and it was just like, you know what? That's annoying. I don't want to give the ball that I was just aced with. I wouldn't want to give her the ball.
Micah, did you have weird on-court habits? Were you a player that just needed the ball or like something crazy? Are you team Conchita or team Patty in this age-old fight, this legendary fight?
No, I think I had so much to do with myself that all those kind of extra things.
Wait. Hypothetically, if someone aced you and only kept asking for the ball that they won the point with, would you give them the ball?
I'd probably step on that and try to like somehow also get it wet, then step on it if it's on clay to make it super, super heavy, and then go here. Here is the ball.
Team Schnieder on that. I'm Team Schnieder. You can put that on my gravestone.
I get the Conchita part too, though. You know, I'd want the ball back. I get it. But all right. So like 17, let's keep going real quick. We'll just, Sonia Mirza was at 17.
Fantastic forehand.
18, Justine Enna. I mean, the comeback, I mean, the unexpectedly retiring in 2008, right before the French Open, really a tough moment in WTA history, actually. We're going to talk about it when we get to our 2000s episode. But 19, Tatiana Maria, come on. Two pregnancies? She came back? Hello. She won in Bogota this year, defended her title. Amazing. Elena Vesnina is on the list. Rebecca Marino came back. She was 38 in the world, had a mental break. She came back. Beatrice Haddad-Maia? I mean, that's another one. Billie Jean King's on the list. Horonkova at 24. Can we just talk about Horonkova for one quick second? Because I'm sorry, because again, I'm just excited we get to talk about tennis today. But Horonkova, 2017, plays Wimbledon. 2017, we're talking. Then she comes back in 2020, and her first tournament back, she has like a brutal draw at the pandemic US Open. She beats Samsonova, Vekic, Muguruza, Cornet, loses to Serena in three tight sets. Her first tournament back. It was just crazy. Anyway, I just love that one. The final list, Arantxa Sánchez Vicario, Sue Shea, and Barbara Strizova, who just made the quarters in Madrid. I mean, love it. Svitolina, who just came back, and then Taylor Townsend. So great list, guys.
Oh, Taylor Townsend. What a great story.
She's five in the world right now in doubles. She just posted on her Instagram. I mean, come on.
Yeah, she should be.
I know I've said this, but go back and listen to the Taylor Townsend episode. We had her during her break before she came back, and she envisioned what her comeback would be like.
I love her.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, guys, that was some iconic WT moments, but let's go to the top 10 right now. Are we ready? Okay, let's unveil our top 10 list. Number 10 was surprising. Maybe not so surprising because she's, you know, very popular, but it's Maria Sharapova coming back from her drug suspension, her Meldonian gate. We're talking five-time Grand Slam champion, played famously at the 2016 Australian Open, where she lost in the quarters to Serena, 4-1. Then Meldonian gate ensued and the positive test. Alex, that fairly ugly carpet moment was iconic in tennis history. It must have been very humbling for Maria to come back and play after that. I mean, obviously, you know, to know that people had thought, like the Bouchards of the world, to make those comments. I mean, it was constant. It's a pretty big moment from the past 50 years, I'd say.
I mean, it's spicy. It's very spicy. I don't think that it is germane to tennis, because I think we just saw in the last Winter Olympics, like, oh, well, the heart medicine came back. Like, there was, if you're unfamiliar, there was a younger figure skater who was 15 or something and just hitting every triple axel. And it was just like, oh, wow, she's taking her grandpa's heart medicine, which is strangely similar to Meldonium. But I mean, I don't know. I do think that it's kind of admirable that she took accountability. I'm kind of surprised that she came back too. Mm-hmm. And it's also like, lover or hater, you're never going to ignore Maria Sharapova, right? Like, it's like, she would be my real housewife because she is ready. She's always ready to fight and always ready to like bring the heat no matter what. So it's just like, yes, she will be the villain of someone's story and has no problem with that. And I think I kind of love that about her.
We're on the same page. You're thinking what I'm thinking for sure. But I do wonder from a player perspective, I know from a fan perspective, we're all, oh my gosh, Maria's coming back. You know, it's this carpet moment. Is she retiring? Is she, you know, what's going on? And she comes back and we're all, you know, to a certain degree, like you said, we're happy that she comes back. But from a player perspective, like Micah, I do wonder, Micah, if a player comes back from a suspension, can they ever redeem themselves in players' eyes? Or is it once a cheater, always a cheater? Is it, you know, what's the mentality from the player perspective?
Goodness, I mean, that's a really tough one because
there
were still so, to my mind, or for me personally, there were still so many more questions that were not answered that where you just go like, Okay, that's, yeah, I need more information on that one. I was never the biggest fan, just because as a second tier player, so to speak, I mean, just kind of on the cusp of being seated at places, but like, to me, she so embodied the, okay, we're all on the WTA tour, but we're really not on the same tour. You know, it's the, oh, I'm trying to, at a tournament, to maybe get on the show court for once to just get the experience to play. And it's like, and you know, you share the court for an hour with three other players. And here goes Maria Sharapova, 2 hours on center court and does dance moves, you know, doesn't even use the court time. So that was kind of like the discrepancy. So a little bit, potentially, there was a little bit of Schadenfreude in there. So yeah, but on the comeback, I was kind of like, didn't care for you before as much.
Yeah, I hear you. She came back in Stuttgart in 2017. She came back in Germany, actually, just for, you know, just to say hi.
Just to get the Porsche.
Love a Porsche. I love a Kerber Porsche. I do. She lost in the semifinals to Modanovic. So, you know, and then we had that, the next tournament back was the big Madrid gate with Bouchard. You know, she beat Halep in the US Open. She did win her 36th title in her comeback. She did lose to Serena as well, but and she officially retired in 2020 at the Australian Open to Vekic. But you know, I think some people think of it as a as successful, because she did come back and she said, you know what, let me prove that I'm actually a great tennis player, and she did. You know, she did prove herself. Maybe she didn't win a Grand Slam, but you know, kudos to Sharapova for coming.
Hey, I would have taken that.
Yeah, right. All right, let's go to number 9 on the list. We're talking about two-time Wimbledon champion Kvitova, who is always going to be a fan favorite. During the off-season in 2016, in December, news broke in Prague that Petra had been the target of a home invasion, and she fended off a knife attack. They ended up cutting her left hand. She's a lefty. She's like, you know, the lefty. And she severed a tendon because she, you know why she severed a tendon? Because she fought off the knife attack to her neck. Some people thought she'd never play again. When we talk about warrior, she's another absolute warrior of the game. She ended up only being out for 6 months. She came back in 2017 at the French Open. She made the second round. It was a highly anticipated comeback for her. The psycho, by the way, ended up getting just 8 years in prison. So, I mean, something else that's wrong.
Oh, he's coming back out soon, I guess.
Exactly, right? Nuts. She did win her very next tournament in Birmingham. So now 11 tournaments since that incident that she's won. Alex, this is one of the happier comeback stories, I would say.
You know what? You cannot count out Kvitova on the grass court. Like, it'll be 100 years from now. I'll be like, is Kvitova still playing? Yeah, she could probably win.
I mean, this is very triumph over tragedy, too. I mean, so of course we love this. I mean, I feel like it's...
And she just won Miami and nobody thought she could.
Exactly. She just won in Miami, as Micah just said. I mean, literally, she's still playing great today. But, you know, she can go back and... You know, in this speech, you know, that she's going to make in Newport, it's going to be like, you know, one day I thought I'd never play again because I had to fend off this like horrific attack.
I mean, that put it in perspective. I mean, who the heck has the presence of mind to then, you're about to get freaking murdered. She fends it off, you know, then probably everything, anything stressful on the tennis court is like, oh, that's cute. Really? You're five all in the third in the tiebreaker.
Yeah. What's worse than that? Yeah. Am I stressed about this? No. You ever had a knife to your neck? Probably not.
Exactly. So
exactly.
But to also then going back to normal life.
Yeah. To Alex's point, who doesn't root for Petra Kvitova? I mean, we're talking in the upper echelon of favorites. We're talking Venus and Su Wei and Kvitova, right? These are the players we root for and that are playing today. So it's really, really great.
Also, like, watching her, don't know if there's any other, maybe Mary Pierce to an extent, but it's just like when the stars are aligned, right? For like a week, if whatever is the universe is dealt and you're up against Kvitova and it's like one of those days, it's like you're lucky to get it. And she is on, she can beat anyone. Like, again, 100 years from now, if Kvitova is still alive, I would put all my money on her on Wimbledon, because it's just like,
she's coming with a walker.
Yeah, she would come out with a walker, and then it's just like, wow, she beat Olympia Williams. She'd be
like, right.
Like, it's like the magic of her game is that, like, you cannot stop watching. Every point feels like a match point. And then it's just like, when she's on, there's nothing more powerful and beautiful to watch than when she is on, because you're just like, she can beat everyone.
I love it. Absolutely deserves to be on the list. All right, let's move on to number 8 here. Number 8 had multiple comebacks on her resume. It's former world number one and 25 Grand Slam champion, Martina Hingis. I mean, come on, let's talk about Martina for a minute. She stopped playing at the end of 2002 with ankle injuries and surprisingly showed up at an event in Thailand in 2005 with a wild card. I mean, come on. She just was like, hey, by the way, here I am. You know, I played with some world team tennis matches and I think I'm just going to start playing again. She played full time in 2006 and got all the way back to 6th in the world and then was forced to retire again in 2007 after a positive test for banned substance that year at Wimbledon. Well, I think we all know it was cocaine. All right, fine. And for me, Alex, I know there's been a lot of shocking retirements over the years, like Sharapova, Justine Enna. I'll never get over that moment where the best player in the world is like, I'm about to play in my favorite Grand Slam where I'm the favorite and I'm just going to retire. Where does this one rank for you with Hingis? I mean, it's surprising giving her reason, I guess, when she had to retire. But is it easier to forgive because it wasn't like, I don't know, this steroid, I guess. I mean, it was just like, okay, she made a mistake. It was like, it was fine.
At some point, like, it's just like, come on, you know, you're going to get drug tested. Please be smart about this. But it's also like, what did she have left to do? I think like there's something whimsy. As far as positive substance abuse, like she was out partying. She was like, what, in her 20s, out partying.
I'm going to ride my horse and then I'm going to go to the club.
Right.
Well, I'm in my 20s.
As long as it didn't harm anyone and it didn't affect any other players, you're just kind of like, well, that was her bad. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff to be mad at Martina Hingis about.
Okay.
We're being honest. There was she had a mouth on her. She was not afraid of speaking. And it's just like, I would suggest some of the things she said about Amelie Mauresmo, some of the things she said about the Williams sisters, kind of worse than being out partying. But again, fantastic player.
Yeah.
I think what I love about her comeback was we got so used to the game of like, just hard hitting.
Agreed.
Watching Martina Hingis is such a joy because even when she first came, she was beating all these power players by being like, well, I'm going to hit down the line. I'm going to come to net and I'm going to switch the angles up and I'm going to change direction. And it's just like, she brought so much of an appreciation to what she did to those things. And it's just like her coming back against like Sharapova and the Williams sisters and everyone that was ball bashing at the time. And she even like, I think upped her game a little bit. She was hitting the ball a little flatter, a little harder. I don't know. Like I appreciated the contrast of styles when she came back.
I couldn't agree more with you. I'm a huge Martina Hingis fan. Even to this day, I loved her game. It was the variety is something we have never seen even since her. I think it's so fantastic. Micah, you played Hingis twice in your career at the 98 French and the third round of Indian Wells in 97. At the peak of Hingis, we're talking right before, you know, we're winning Grand Slams. What was Hingis like and any good stories from playing Hingis?
Yeah, I mean, to be perfect, I know that everybody or a lot of people really disliked her, but she was always super nice to me because I think she just didn't have anything to worry about with me. She should just be behind me. I do remember that her mom was super nice after the match because twice, I mean, I think I got three games, two games or something. I mean, the score looked horrendous. But at the French Open in particular, like, you know, the stupid thing when we say, oh, well, the score doesn't reflect the match. It really didn't. But what was so, for me, so memorable was also like, she kind of toyed with you. That's what it felt like to me. It's like, you know, I was up, I don't know how many times. I actually have the French Open match on video. And I forgot to count how many times I was up 40-15 or 40-love even or had ad or something. It felt like, oh, that's kind of cute up to now, but let me get serious now. But her mom after the match came down in the locker room and said like, hey, that was a great match. Awesome. And I'm like, A lot of people don't understand is when she came on so young, I was at a 25K when she played and it was mayhem. It was nuts because everybody was like, oh my God, this is the new Wunderkind. And she was literally 12. And to be in that environment and nobody ever treated her like a kid, I think. And I couldn't care less. So I just kind of joked around with her in the locker room. And I think she really appreciated that I didn't treat her like this super alien that she kind of was playing wise.
Wait, what was it like playing against her? Like
it sucked.
What was it like to just like, because like with power, right? Like you could see someone hitting the crap out of the ball and you could see how fast it's going.
Yeah.
with her, it's just like, I think it's hard for people to understand who don't play tennis to understand like what made her so good. Like when she's hitting like down the lines, like from like off the court, like it's like nuts, right?
You couldn't see any change of direction. Like it looked in her mind, like, how can I hurt you the most? And she played that out of any position on the court. And rewatching that match, just her super, super close court position up at the baseline. I mean, she took the ball so early, opening the courts. And then the second she has you somehow in a bind, yeah, plays the next unbelievable ball that was so easy for her. Like it was so effortless that it was so frustrating. You know, you think you hit a really great shot. And I did actually in Indian Wells, like I hit the serve of the week, the speed of 103 miles per hour, which now is like an average second serve, I think. Uh-huh. So, and I look at the speed gun and yeah, great. I hit a serve with 103 miles, but her return came back with like 180 because I hit it with zero placement. And she kind of looked over and kind of grinned sort of.
It kind of feels like chaos, right? Like on the court.
Yeah.
Like you're just like, oh, I had no idea what I'm doing. When usually when you play someone, you're like, oh, this is how the tennis match feels.
Yeah. I love Alex's word, chaos. Chaos is definitely how Martina loved to wreak havoc on the court. And she'd come back playing doubles full time in 2013 again after the suspension. And she'd win 10 more doubles titles and some mixed majors. Like she could have retired 6 times and come back.
Yeah.
Absolute legend. All right. Number 7 on the list. We have to talk about my girl, Victoria Azarenka. We talk about her comeback in our episode that we had. I highly recommend going back and listening to it. I won't go too much into it here because we talk about it so much on our episode. But one of the reasons she's so high on this list is because she's still so popular today. And she's playing such great tennis, like her semifinal run in Australia this year. But also because of the circumstances involving her retirement. Because in 2016, if we remember, she put herself back in the top 5 by becoming only the 3rd person in the Open era to win the Sunshine Double. And then a couple months later, she announces she's pregnant and takes a break from tennis. She came back in Mallorca in 2017, and she's playing some great tennis. Get back in the top 20. She'd go on to make 2 Grand Slam finals in singles and doubles, and she just won another big doubles title in Madrid just recently. She's someone that loves competing. She loves tennis. Plays today because she loves getting better, and Leo's the freaking best. Leo's just amazing. So, you know, I really think she deserves to be very high on this list. And her comeback, you know, the story is not over. She's still playing some great tennis today. So let's see how much further. Maybe she can climb even higher on this list. You know, I think it's amazing.
Amazing backhand. Love that backhand.
All right, let's go to number 6. We're winding down today here in our discussion. We're at number 6 with Olympic gold medalist galore and 73 combined titles. It's the legend, Venus Ebony Starr. Let's talk about Venus real quick. And at the 2011 US Open, Venus had been struggling with injuries. And we found out after she withdrew from a 2nd round match against Sabine Lisicki that she had been diagnosed with Sjogren's syndrome, which was an autoimmune disease. We would see Venus make a triumphant return in 2012 playing Fed Cup doubles with Liesl Huber, which she won, obviously. And that same year in 2012, she'd go on to win her 3rd doubles gold medal. She'd make 2 more Grand Slam finals and re-enter the top 5 in 2017. Nothing but success for Venus Williams as she entered her 30th year, as we mentioned, on the WTA Tour. She played in Auckland this year. It's amazing. Alex, Venus wasn't out very long with Sjogren's, but her diagnosis made huge headlines all over the world. It affected all of us, especially because it was the first time that we'd actually seen them vulnerable, really, at that point. So fans got a little worried, right? That, I mean, could this be the end of this dynasty almost?
Venus Williams is the epitome of, like, dignity. I think that her and her sister, especially of late, drawn more attention to like women's health and like Black women's health, especially in this country, and how it isn't taken seriously by medical officials. And I think they really shed the light on that, because I don't think that people were talking about that before they came out with their diagnoses. I think with her comeback, I think throughout every single point of her career, it's always been this quiet dignity. And I don't think that anyone that has a sister like Serena And that has to play in the shadow of your younger sister when you're also like one of the greatest of all time, a Hall of Famer, and win and lose with that kind of dignity throughout every single year. Just like even like back when she came out and with all the adversity that her and her sister had to go through, it's always been done with class and dignity and just this complete sense of self that I appreciate and like to see on the court.
Oh, I love her so much. Micah, you were still playing on the tour when Venus made her debut at the Bank of the West Classic in 1994. Hello, shout out to that tournament. What do you remember about the buzz? What do you remember? I don't think you were at that tournament unless you correct me. But obviously the buzz, you talked about Hingis and the buzz that Hingis was getting at 12 years old. We're talking about a 14-year-old Venus Williams at this time, right? Is that how old she was? At 14? What is this buzz like that, oh my gosh, we're about to see the next era of this tour?
I think 1994 in Toronto, I think that's where I saw Venus first, or she played the first time. You'd see an entourage of, you knew where she was with like a cluster of bodyguards and camera people and stuff. But even then, because I think that it was Serena was still ineligible because of the age eligibility rules, even then everybody was saying, well, yeah, I mean, Venus is great, but her little sister, and boom, comes out like nuts, you know, Serena. And I agree. I mean, all the things that, you know, they had to go through. And now when you're saying that 30 years, like that's how long I've played tennis. Ish, sort of. I mean, but you're at the top of the game. And I hate when people say, like, why should she get a wild card? She's not even playing anymore. It's like, it doesn't freaking matter. I mean, she can jump out there and still beat anyone. Who cares? And even if she doesn't, who gives a...
Exactly. Yeah. She loves tennis so much. Let's celebrate. Let's continue to elongate the careers of these magnificent women that have really... you know, given their life to the sport and have, you know, we should celebrate them always. I completely agree.
And not just sport. I know that there's so much controversy but what about Serena at the US Open? And it's like, have you watched any Kyrgios matches or Bublik or whatever? It's like, really, just because she's a Black woman, we point her out? Shocker.
But also with, I think with Venus Williams, it's just look at how much this woman, like the Wimbledon fair pay, right? People were not speaking about those things. And it's just like, well, look what she's done for the sport. The least you could do is give her a wild card. Like give this woman a wild card.
She'll get wild cards for eternity. I hope she gets one at 60. I mean, in a walker.
Also with a walker.
Yeah, Kvitova and Venus.
her and Kvitova. The 2100 Wimbledon. That's who I want to see in the finals.
She is a treasure. She's a unicorn. She is a tennis prodigy. She was all the things. So, I mean, obviously, yeah, she belongs on the list and very high on the list. And she'll continue to be a fan favorite for the rest of time. So come back anytime, Venus. Number five is another prodigy that we ended up having a really good feel-good story. And it's Jennifer Capriati. Let's talk about Jennifer Capriati for a moment. Jennifer Capriati made her debut to media hype at a WTA event in Boca Raton, getting all the way to the finals. She'd win Olympic gold in 1992, but following a first-round loss in the first round of the 1993 US Open, she'd take a 14-month break from tennis, and we'll never forget that shoplifting mugshot. I mean, I am such a Capriati stan, you have no idea. She'd come back to the tour playing full-time in 1996, and she would do exactly what everyone thought that she would do. She'd win 3 Grand Slams and she'd become world's number one, giving some memorable matches against Serena and Justine and Kim and Venus and Martina. It was amazing. She unofficially retired in 2004 after a loss in Philadelphia, and she stayed out of the tennis limelight for much of the past 20 years. Anyone have any thoughts on the Capriati comeback? I know it's one of my very favorite comebacks. I grew up in Tampa, Florida, where Jennifer lived. I played her brother in juniors. I remember seeing her at a match when I played her brother and I couldn't hit a ball. I was shaking on the court. I don't know. It was like, it's a moment that sticks out in my brain. But you know what's interesting? And I will say before, I'd love to hear your thoughts. It was the first time we'd ever had really a mental break from tennis. Now we hear Muguruza taking a mental break and Anisimova has just come out on Twitter taking a mental break. And it is so normalized now. And I appreciate that because, well, it should be. Naomi Osaka's normalized it. I mean, there's so many players that have come out and said, you know what? Hey, this is too much. Like I need a second to myself. Leave me alone. But Capriati wasn't afforded that luxury back then. I am interested to hear both of your thoughts on what you thought of Capriati as a phenom, Capriati as a hype machine, and then to Capriati coming back and doing what everyone thought that she should have done, and she actually accomplished it.
I mean, I remember same thing. 12 years old, I think I saw her hitting at Wimbledon one time, and she's just on those top courts at Orangi Park where only the, you know, cool kids go. And she's blasting balls, and you're going like, but guess who you saw right there? Her dad. And mother of pearl. I mean, for that kid to have done as much before her break was incredible, because that is a class, I mean, whatever bad word you can think of right now, please think it. And that with a 12-year-old girl, as you know, having to live with that. So that she then kind of, that mugshot was almost that, to me, it felt like, okay, she's being a kid, even in the dumbest of possible ways. And I think that made a pretty clean cut then. And I think her dad was then not in the picture after, and coming back felt so much more, I'm my own person. I'm actually doing this because I want to, because I love it, because I'm good at it, and I'm okay with whatever stupid thing I did. Because yeah, at the end of the day, it's still stupid. But for her to still do what she did, hats off right there.
I remember when it came out and it was in the press, right? Like, it was very much, she was covered as if she had murdered someone,
yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. It was like she smoked a little pot, she shoplifted, but people treated her like this. They were just like, this is a person who cannot be trusted, blah, 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 blah. Like, the narrative was, and she was what, a teen?
It was completely unfair. And I think that's just the changing of the guards now with society. I think we're a little numb to that. I mean, a little shoplifting, okay, fine. Go to Wet Seal.
Right.
Go get your tube top, Jennifer.
Also, like, the pressure on her as a teen to be like, okay, well, when Steffi was up, I remember in the US, they were just like, who's our Steffi? So I think there was all this pressure on Capriati to be our Steffi. Again, Steffi Graf is a once in a lifetime player. Any junior player that you kind of pick at 12 years old and be like, this is our Steffi Graf, this is the person that is going to beat the German machine.
That's a great way to screw up that kid.
Absolutely. It's probably in my top three. I think that story, I mean, if I had to re-rank these, I love that story only because I feel really nostalgic for Jennifer. And I was just, it was so cool that somebody who had that hype machine couldn't really get to it at that point in her life and said, you know what, give me some time to kind of settle into my life and let me come back and really enjoy tennis or whatever it is, and whatever surrounding, like Micah said, around her, you know, whoever she surrounded herself with, she came back and she still triumphed and got to the top of the world. So kudos to Jennifer. Let's go on to four, because number four, probably one of the nicest players I've ever personally met. We're talking about 1996 Olympic gold medalist and former world number one, Lindsay Davenport. I mean, she sat through our show for 2 hours after a hard day at Tennis Channel, where she was up at like 5 a.m, still sat there with a smile on her face. Lindsay had a couple comebacks that we're going to talk about, but her major comeback was after the 2006 season, losing to Moresmo in Beijing. And then she told everyone, hey, I'm pregnant. I'm never coming back. Never going to happen. And then, poof, she's like, oh, I'll go to Bali. Bali's hot. Bali's cute. And then she goes, you know, 2007, she wins the tournament. And, you know, like the legend that she is, that year, she played 3 events and she won 2 of them. So it was pretty amazing. Why do you think fans ranked Lindsay so high on this list?
I was like a teen. I was in high school in Orange County, California. There was a tournament. I think it used to be called the Toshiba Tennis Classic. It was at La Costa. I don't know who does it now, but it's like past sponsorship, I think. And I would go to that in high school. We would go like as a family, and we had good seats, and like we'd watch the matches. But I would always go over to Lindsay Davenport's practice court, because Lindsay Davenport, when Lindsay Davenport hits the ball, it is in the sweet spot every single time. It is nuts. It is not like listening to anyone else hit the ball. It is like, I can't even describe, it's almost like a drum, just like the most perfect tennis ball sound. Like, it crunches. It is a God-given timing.
Didn't we all wish that?
Right. And it's just like, anyone that's watched Lindsay Davenport play tennis live, it's like, you remember that. It's like, that is a core memory for me, like what that ball sounds like coming off of Lindsay Davenport's racket. And so I think for me, I'm just like, oh, that's why I'm a fan. But it's also like, this is a woman who also went through, again, and I think we touched upon this with Capriati, also with Venus, with Serena. Like, being a women's tennis player, even Kournikova, being a women's tennis player is not easy, especially with, like, with your looks, with your weight, with your athleticism. It's everything is, like, microscopically picked apart. And if you watch the coverage of Lindsay Davenport as a teen when she was coming up, no one would stop talking about her weight, and it would be the grossest ways. Like, I think we're getting better at it, but even like some of the commentators today that were around, they were just like, oh, she's lazy, she's not working hard. And it's like, no, it's like people's bodies are bodies. This is a professional tennis player. No one can do what she can do on the court. And so I think when we watch her win, we want to see that person win, right? We want to see her prove these people wrong, no matter how many times it's happened in her career. Sorry, I have such a sweet spot for Lindsay Davenport.
No, this is great. That, yeah.
And that's why she's so revered to this day. I mean, absolutely. I mean, everyone has always cheered for Lindsay Davenport. And what I do love about that comeback, that when she did come back and she started playing full time again for that year and a half, she popularized the idea that, you know, having a kid on tour is pretty fucking cool and I can do it. And, you know, we all had to listen to Vika when she got to Azarenka, when she got to that 2020 US Open. The narrative the entire tournament was, oh my gosh, you're in the final and you're a mom too? I mean, that's crazy. You know, but we had done this already with Lindsay back in the day, and it was kind of sad to kind of revisit that. But, you know, I loved it. And Micah, you were still playing at the height of Lindsay Davenport as well in 1998 and 1999 in her dominance. I don't think you ever played Lindsay, but...
I actually did. Her and Chanda were still in school, I want to say. And they got a wild card in Indianapolis, maybe in 93 or something. And I mean, you have two of the hardest hitting people. And again, I was like, grown up on clay court, I'm used to returning like 18 feet behind the court. Yeah, that just didn't work. I mean, we lost like 7-6, 7-6 or something. That was the first time. And that was, to me, almost the ringing in of the new guard, if you will. I mean, her being 6 foot something already. I remember not like, oh my God, she's big, but big, powerful.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. And to me, that really drove home. It's like, wow, she's still going to school. It sucks. You know, losing to middle schoolers.
Yeah, I hear you. I love that everyone ranked Lindsay in the top four. I think absolutely she belongs there. It was such a great comeback. I mean, for someone as a legend as Lindsay is. We're going on to number three right now, guys. I really want to get your opinion here. This is one I'll never forget, actually. I remember exactly where I was during this moment. And when finding out the news as a kid that the number one tennis player in the world had been stabbed by a lunatic fan, it was...
horrible.
Something I remember feeling like, oh my gosh, like what is happening in the world? Even as a child. And we're talking about Monica Seles. Monica was out from May of 1993 until August of 95, when she made a triumphant return at the 1995 Canadian Open by beating Sabatini in the semifinals 1-0, and then Amanda Kutzer in the final 0-1. I mean, she returned to form so quickly. It was insane. She'd go on to get to the finals of the US Open, and she would win the 1996 Australian Open. And for me, I consider this probably, I don't know, maybe my favorite comeback of all time. Alex, there's so much to unpack with this one. There really is. I know you're a generational kid like I am in this era. You know, we'll be talking about this incident and everything 90s tennis in an upcoming episode as well. We'll talk more in depth about this.
Well, the thing that's super fucked up and people don't talk about enough is that when she was coming back, they were voting. You could probably shed more light on this. Like, they were voting about her protected ranking, right? Fellow players were voting on it. No one supported her protected ranking.
No, they didn't. I mean, everyone was silent. I mean, it took a while for her to come back. I think Navratilova was the president of the WTA at the time, and she kind of promised, or she got the co-number one ranking, and that's when, you know, maybe Monica came back. But I will say, I mean, we do have somebody that was here. I mean, Micah, you played Monica Seles, and you actually were at the 1993 Hamburg event that this horrific moment in tennis history happened.
I was actually already back home again because I'd lost in the first round, I think. But I remember watching...
I didn't mention that, Micah. You know, I was being quiet about that.
Well, I was sitting in my hotel room watching TV. No, I'm kidding. I was home watching TV, and I mean, the TV stayed on it.
Yeah.
And that was just insane. And then it's a German. I mean, the guy was a German and, you know, wanted to prevent her from, you know, taking over world tennis or whatever. Like, yeah, completely insane. And then, of course, you had the, you know, coverage also how Steffi felt about it, because, I mean, that was done in her name. And that was, thank you that you did say fucked up, but that was fucked up. Put yourself into her shoes. And then, I mean, I remember Monica as also one of the nicest people, because I played her in Amelia Island and I had food poisoning. And somebody the night before had actually also withdrawn. So they wanted to make sure that they have a night match. And I'm going out there and, you know, 12 hours before, I'm still puking my guts out. But playing her, just warming up with her, what you mentioned, the power is one thing. And one thing everybody always asks me is like, were you not distracted by the shrieking? And like, compared to what we hear these days, it was like a mere whisper. Yeah, I didn't really notice. And I did really well, actually, surprisingly, but then had to stop because I couldn't walk anymore. And she, the next day, because I still had to play doubles, she asked me how I was. Like, she came up to me in the locker room and said like, hey, that was, you know, such a bummer that you couldn't finish. And it was a great match. And so I always have that in as a memory. And I also have that in the memory that everybody was just making fun of her and because of her weight. And it's like, really? Can you not just leave her the fuck alone? Again, somebody is survived. Would you have the guts to come back out and play after, like, step on a tennis court? Just overcome that traumatic experience. Like, I think every time I would have seen red clay, I'm like, okay, I'm out of here.
I'm still mad that I still like hold a grudge over that, whether her protected ranking and the voting. It's like,
totally.
No one talks about it. And it was just,
we'll talk about it. We have a whole episode coming up. It's going to be great. I mean, I agree with you, Alex. I mean, it's something, you know, we don't really think about it. And, you know, when we go back to that moment, it's like, really, that really happened? Like, this is where we were. Like, you had people that were really saying no.
Why would it be different than any of the of your regular, like, for injury?
Right. And it's just like, this changed. This was like one of the grossest moments in tennis that's ever happened.
I wonder, it got me thinking, Micah, you know, we're dealing with a lot in the world today, obviously, with politics and the war in Ukraine right now with Belarusian players and Russian players. And I do wonder, because there was an incident that happened in Germany by a German because of the number one German in the world. And as somebody who played for Germany, played Fed Cup for Germany, did you ever feel a certain way that people kind of made Germans out to be the bad guy in the situation? Did you feel like you had to defend the country at all? I mean, in that regard?
No, I think because it was so clear, it became so clear that this guy is totally, absolutely deranged.
Yeah.
What was talked about was all of a sudden you have like added security everywhere. And that's the first time then that you have these like monster dudes, like, yeah, you know, behind your bench facing the other way. And because before we didn't have that, and you did feel a very quick switch in that, but it didn't come down on us at all because it was just, yeah.
I'm so glad that she was able to come back to the court on her own terms and to maybe didn't finish the way she wanted to, because she ended up finishing with an injury at the French Open against Petrova. But she did get to come back, and we didn't let some crazy lunatic kind of control history in that regard. I mean, well, maybe we did, because there's a huge debate about whether Monica would have been up there, you know, so who knows?
When you consider Monica's legacy, it's like every single tennis player from like the Williams sisters, any power tennis player today,
yeah,
that's all Monica. Like, that is Monica's imprint. Taking the ball so early, so flat, and just dominating from the very first return, that is her imprint on women's tennis.
Well, what a great segue to number two today, because when we're talking about dominance and we're talking about an imprint and we're talking about a legacy like Monica Seles, number two on the list of greatest comebacks is future Hall of Famer, the GOAT, Serena Williams. So let's talk about it. I mean, she's had so many comebacks. I mean, this is kind of moot. I mean, I think this topic, I mean, we already know probably why she's not number one, because there were just so many that she just split the vote. I want to run through them really quickly.
She's going to come back again. Like, she's,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, Alex, wait, hold on there. I mean, what is more iconic than a Serena Williams comeback? There's not much. In 2003, she was out from Wimbledon all the way to 2004, the Miami Open, due to a knee surgery. She came back, won the title in Miami, despite being away from the tour for 8 months. I mean, that was the first time she'd really kind of spent some time away from tour. In 2006, she played the Australian Open in January. We didn't see her until August in Cincinnati. She was out for 6 months with later what she said was depression and ongoing knee injury as well, which, you know, fascinating that she was able to talk about that. In 2010, she won Wimbledon and she was out for almost a full year, coming back the following year in 2011, Eastbourne, when she stepped on broken glass.
Yeah.
And Crazy, right? I mean, then in March of 2011, during that timeout, she came out that she had suffered the pulmonary embolism as well. I mean, which she continued to have problems with. In 2017, she famously won the Australian Open, and we didn't see her for over a year until 2018 Indian Wells because, you know, she was pregnant. So that was iconic. I mean, another iconic Serena Williams moment. If there's a category for, I mean, best way to win a tournament, maybe not best comeback, but best way to win a tournament and say peace out. I mean, that was definitely it for sure, winning that Australian Open. Then in Wimbledon in 2021, she had that horrible leg injury against Šašković where we all just kind of collectively, we could hear all tennis fans around the world just groan. And she was out for a year until that huge 2022 Wimbledon to US Open swan song that we just kind of all went through together. And we're still probably not over yet.
Let her come back. Come back, Serena. Come back. I know she's just announced her pregnancy.
Right? Let's talk about it. Yeah. Tatiana Maria had two comebacks already from pregnancy. Why can't Serena? Of course she can. What are the chances in the tennis universe that we'll see I was going to say Maria Sharapova, but don't say that. What are the chances in the universe that we're going to see Serena Williams, even on a doubles court again? What would you say percentage-wise, Alex?
Yes, there's
you
no...
You think she's coming back 100%?
We will get in like 2 years, I believe that she will come back in some capacity. There's no way that she doesn't come back. I feel like she desperately wants to be on the court again.
That's great. Micah, do you agree?
I'm probably not at 100% because okay. You never know what happens in pregnancy and whatever.
Right.
But it's not over yet. I don't think so either.
I mean, you're giving so many people hope today, Alex.
The crazy thing is she looked horrific at Wimbledon, right? Like she did not look like herself at Wimbledon. She also didn't look like herself in like the first couple rounds of the tune-up tournaments. And then something clicked in like the second set of that US Open. And you're just like, okay, wow. When she played Kontaveit, and she was hitting, I think if she got through her third round match in straight sets, like if there was a way to pull that off, she would have played herself into shape and into timing. And it's just like one of those weird things. You're just like, well, this is a person who looked so abysmal 2 weeks ago, out of practice, out of shape, is trading like ground strokes with Kontaveit. And you're just like, well, it wasn't that far-fetched to think that like, okay, well, if she can do this after like 2 weeks, give her two more weeks, she could win the tournament.
I'm not sure if you guys watched the first few episodes of Breaking Point because Ayla Tomjanovic was on that, but
yeah.
They're going to do the second series of episodes coming out, and it's Ayla at the US Open with Serena. I mean, I just would love to see the inner workings of that. I mean, I remember just screaming at the television like any Serena fan would, any WTA fan. It was amazing. We bow down to Serena always. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, we just need to shut up and just be appreciative that all the time that she was away from the court, the collective years, really, if you add them up, it was quite some time in all those breaks from the game that she was able to play for so long, and we got to cheer her on and be fans of hers for so long. So I hope your 100% holds true, Alex. I think,
do you want to counter out? I don't think you want to counter out. So
never. And I will be front and center. Alex, you and I are going to sit front row at that comeback in 2 years. We're going to be there. Okay.
Right. US Open. It's definitely going to be at the US Open.
Okay, perfect. We're on to number one. Speaking of the US Open, of course, I mean, this is where we're at, guys. I mean, we have had this amazing countdown today. I can't thank you both enough. We've had so many great memories. It's time for number one on this list, of course. And I understand why it's number one. I mean, Serena, of course, we're talking about the GOATs, but she had so many. And there was just one moment that's really defining. And I think it's one of the most iconic moments from the past 50 years. And of course, we're talking about, you guessed it, that amazing run at the US Open of Kim Clijsters that was voted by tennis fans as your favorite comeback story from the past 50 years. Here's the rundown. Kim retired from tennis at just 23 years old in 2007 to get married and have a family. She'd return to the tour 2 years later, and in just her third tournament back, she'd win the 2009 US Open to become the first mother to win a Grand Slam since Ivan Gulagankali in 1980. We won't even talk about the second comeback today because we're just going to pretend it didn't happen at this point. And we were just happy to have her back during that time period. I mean, we all get a little bored and, you know, but let's talk about it. Alex, that image of Kim Clijsters winning the 2009 US Open with her daughter Jada by her side, in my opinion, is one of the most iconic WTA memories. It's right up there for sure. The way she won the title, plus she ended up winning that title, beating Serena and beating Venus to win that title too. I mean, the draw was ridiculous for her. Why do you think so many fans voted her as number one?
how is she better than when she left? Like, that was the crazy part. It was like she was hitting harder. She was moving faster. She was still doing the splits. It was just like, yeah. How did you get better? People aren't supposed to get better. Like, you can't come back. Like, if I just like took off work for like years, I wouldn't be better at work.
But maybe mental breaks are an important thing. I mean, here we go.
Sure. Okay. Keith Clijsters, right? Was like right there with Serena, right there with Ennen Arden. She was there with everyone. She was, I think one of the knocks on her was maybe like she wasn't as mentally strong as her, the other Belgian, or as mentally strong as Serena. And I think like when she came back, her win was also proving all those people wrong. Like, I think one of the common threads of this comeback was like, there are always haters and there are always people being like, well, you can't do this. And I think what's so satisfying about a comeback is like, well, actually she could, and she did. I think the narrative around her was like, she's always too nice. She's too nice. She's the polite Belgian that she doesn't have the killer instinct. But like, I think tennis pundits were like, oh, well, this is some kind of thing with her. It's like a failing with her. And I think like when she came back, it was like, actually, it wasn't at all. I'm better than I was before. Almost like an FU. Not really an FU, because Kim Clijsters is probably one of the nicest people.
Yeah.
So nice to watch someone actually fulfill their potential and what we want for them.
Yeah. And I loved having her come back actually this past second go round too, because you just see the love that somebody has for the game. And, you know, that's just what the way it should be from a fan perspective. For myself, that's what I want in my favorite players. Somebody who really enjoys the game and loves the game and is willing to come back even and lose, you know what I mean? Just because I love being on the court and competing. So I love that. Well, that was our number one today. So congratulations, Kim Clijsters. I mean, you all voted for her, and I think you all did a great job. I love this list because, again, we talked about 29 amazing players throughout tennis history in the past 50 years. Marianna Lucic-Baroni as well.
I love her.
Anybody else we're missing?
I would say I want a special shout out to Amanda Anisimova. I hope she comes back. I've never seen a more talented American in a long time with those ground strokes. I hope she comes back from a mental break.
I mean, there's so many great players that are out right now on a break. You know, we mentioned Garbine Muguruza, Angelique Kerber's out, Simona Halep. I mean, there's so many players that we don't know. There's question marks around so many players. Can you imagine Kerber coming back and winning after pregnancy, after winning the US Open? I mean, what a Cinderella story that would be too. I mean, it would be really great.
Well, Naomi Osaka, same thing.
Osaka.
You know what I absolutely love is it is pregnancy. Because I remember, I mean, not that I ever was in that boat, but I know a lot of players who retired, okay, I'm ready for family now.
And it wasn't an option. Sky's the limit. I would love a great Osaka comeback too.
Watch women win.
That's right. That's right. I want to thank my guests for the time and opinions today. Please go follow the hilarious Alex Abad-Santos on Twitter at Alex_ABADS. And go check out his articles on Box.com. Thank you, Alex. So great to meet you. Thanks for all the opinions today.
Oh my God. Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening. Thanks for like listening to me gush.
Exactly, right? Our player guest today is still very much involved in tennis. Go check out her website, MicaBabble.com, and her YouTube channel, MicaBabble Tennis, for comprehensive videos that will definitely improve your tennis game. And as always, please go follow us on Instagram at FantasticTennisPod or on Twitter at FanTennisPod. As always, I'm John Gurica, and thank you for listening. This has been fantastic. Yeah.